This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hey everybody, it's the Hockey News Podcast. Matt Larkin is here with Ken Campbell and Ryan Kennedy as usual. And it's Hockey Hall of Fame week in November, so I feel like once Ken is done loudly clearing his throat, we should maybe discuss the inductees and what we think about them.
Just give me a second. Okay.
Good? You're good? Yeah. Okay. You're good. So from the players' side, usually that's what sparks the debate. We've got Dave Andrechuk, we've got Paul Kariya, Mark Recchi, Timu Slanny, Danielle Goyette. And to me, I mean, Timu was the slam dunk, and I think Goyette, history-based as
absolutely.
Well, a slam dunk.
Absolutely.
But the three names that are more interesting to me, Kariya because of the shortened career, Andrechuk because he waited forever, and Recchi because he was just around a long time and never did anything individually spectacular. So I'm kind of curious where you guys land on that trio in particular, and are you of the camp that, no, they have, you know, Kariya, great per-game stats, deserves it, Recchi, great volume stats, Andrechuk too, they all deserve it, or do you think one of those guys, none of those guys, where do you kind of stand?
Well, I'm of the opinion that the Hall of Fame should be for the great, not just the really good. So I'll let that sit and you can decide what you want about that.
Yeah.
But the conclusion I've come to with the Hall of Fame is that from now on, in my mind, there are first tier and second tier Hall of Famers. And the first tier Hall of Famers are guys who get in, who are slam dunks, and they get in 3 years after they retire, okay? So Timo Solani, first-tier Hall of Famer, got in 3 years after he retired. You know, the guys that are locks. So those guys are the true, like, real kind of first-tier Hall of Famers, and then the rest of the guys are second-tier Hall of Famers, so I would put all those other people in the second tier. I mean, you know, they're not in the class of the egregious ones, and I'm not going to say who they are because we all know they're Bob Pulford, Rogge Vachon, and Dick Duff. But you know,
I'm Ernie Fedorov.
Yeah, but I would say that's what I would say. I would say to me, my new way of measuring a Hall of Famer is, and my standards are high. My standards are high for superstar. My standards are high for a Hall of Famer. And to me, those guys are second tier Hall of Famers, and Timo Solani is a first tier Hall of Famer.
Mm. I agree. I sort of joke that they should just call it the Hall of Buddies. You know, it's like, so-and-so needs to get in. Come on, get him in. And they talk to everybody on the committee.
Well, you know,
sounds like a Kevin James sitcom.
You know what?
New NBC,
you
Hall of Buddies.
I'm not too sure you're not far wrong on that. I'm really not. I do know for a fact that there are guys who are in there because people have said, hey, we got to get this guy in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
No question about it.
Yeah. So having said that, I think if you look at who has gotten in, then this year's class deserves to get in. But to Ken's point, I would pretty much agree. With Paul Kariya, I think that there's a slightly better case in that he was maybe the best college hockey player of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly played on what most people consider the best team of all time at the University of Maine. And because he played in the dead puck era, the offense he was able to create as a smaller player too, not to mention, was incredibly impressive. And, you know, you can't obviously speculate how much better he would have been had it not been for injuries.
Because sure, you can. I'm doing it in a blog that's going to run on THN.com today. You can definitely speculate.
Okay,
on that.
Ken can speculate about it.
But nobody else.
But nobody
would have been.
The royal you cannot. But for me, I kind of feel that Curry would be maybe in that, like, 1B tier,
will. Yeah.
But I think if you're going by the metrics of the Hall of Fame, you look at Recchi winning cups with multiple teams, Andrechuk being maybe the best net front presence.
One of the best power play guys.
One of the best power play guys ever.
Yeah.
You know, for me, that qualifies.
Yeah, that's fair. And I think, I mean, in a perfect world, I'm with you, Ken. Like, I would like to see a Hall of Fame where to get in, you have to have been one of the best players, top five, let's say, in the world for a span of 5 years.
Mm.
And I do think Kariya almost passes that test. People forget, he was right there. There was 1 year, I think he had 99 points in 63 games.
Yep.
He was right behind, I believe, Jágr might have won it, or maybe Lemieux back then.
Yep.
So he had stretches where he was that good, and obviously Solani passes that test, had the greatest rookie season in hockey history, 76 goals. He won multiple Rocket Richards, dominant Olympic player, and that counts as well. All-time games played leader in Olympics, I think.
Yeah, and like it was ridiculous in 2014. The guy's 43 years old. Yeah. He's the MVP of the Olympics.
And still dominating. I mean, yeah. But I think as well, but to Ryan's point, I think once the precedent's set, it's like when you let a Bernie Federico in, how can you go to a Mark Recchi or Dave Andrejuk and say, sorry?
Right.
See, but I
unfortunately, the president, and I'm not saying I like it.
I'm not with you on that, guys. I'm not with you on that, Matt. I just don't think that you correct mistakes by making more mistakes. Mm. You don't lower the, you know, you don't raise the standard by continuing to lower the standard. So, so like I say, you know, I mean, if we're going to go by that logic, then everybody who had a career as good as Dick Duff, Rogge Vachon, Bernie Federico, Clark Gillies, Bob Pulford, those guys, anybody who had a career that good should be in. And we know that's not the case. Yeah. It shouldn't be the case.
And I don't want that to happen. In my dystopian future, I think you have a special telecast where you cut guys from the Hall of Fame. Yeah. We're redoing the Hall of Fame, and you pull names out of a hat, and you're surprised. Bernie Federico, you're done. Show me your scoring totals. You have none? Okay, you're out.
You know, it'd be kind of interesting. What if the Hall of Fame only had a set amount of members, and as time went on, you kick people out? So, like, guys that were amazing literally 100 years ago, it's like, well, you know, you weren't Joe Malone. You were almost as good as Joe Malone. You're done. We got to make room for, you know, Sidney Crosby, for example.
Yeah.
That would be kind of
That's pretty cool. I like that. Yeah. We're going to do more reader questions later, but I wanted to address one that was sort of tied into this topic. It was from Jordan Sampson. He said, if it weren't for injuries, who would have had more career points, Eric Lindros, Pavel Bure, or Paul Kariya?
That's a damn good question. It is. I was thinking about that. Yeah. That's a darn good question. I'm going to go Lindros. I mean, Lindros was the most dominant player in the world. He's the only one of that group that actually, you know, won an MVP, won a scoring title. He won a scoring title, didn't he?
He tied for it, but it went to Jaromir Jagr, 94-95. Both had 70 points, right, but Jagr had more goals.
Exactly. Mm. But I mean, he's the guy that I think, you know, just would have been that incredible, you know, presence. And it wasn't just concussions with Lindros. It was a lot of things. Like, he had a lot of bad injuries during his career. So, yeah, I'd probably have to go with Eric on that one. I think Bure would have had the most goals by far. Uh-huh. And probably does. But yeah, I mean, he would have been, you know, the goal scorer of the group. But I think in terms of points, I think it would have been Lindros.
Yeah, this might be boring for podcast purposes, but I was going to say Lindros as well, because if he doesn't have those concussions, he would still be going up the middle with the puck, and he wouldn't have that tentativeness that he talked about later in his career.
Right.
And then how do you stop a guy who is 6'4" and what was he, like 220 pounds?
Oh, at least.
Oh, 235.
235. And has elite skill? Like what do you do? Yeah. You know, there was no way to defend that. You can't even clutch and grab the guy. He's too strong. So I think if he had been able to play the way he wanted to, he would have been unstoppable for a very long time.
And the cool thing is it's really easy to compare those three because they all played in the same era. And if you look at the points per game stats, Lindros just was very dominant. He's one of the highest of all time in points per game. So we saw on a per minute, per game basis how strong Lindros was and how much he could control a game. He had scoring title winning ability that we would have seen a lot more of. For me with Bure, and I agree, Ken, Bure would have scored more goals. If Bure played his entire career without those knee injuries, he might be second behind Gretzky in goals, because he's a guy who, he had a 58 and a 59 goal season in peak dead puck era.
Right.
He had the year where he first came over to Florida. He had 13 goals in 11 games. He had multiple he had two 60 goal seasons with Vancouver. So he was an unbelievable goal scorer, even though it was peak dead puck. So I don't know. I wonder, would Bure have 800 goals if he could have played a 15, 20-year career?
It's funny. I look at Kariya, and I see a guy, he's 43 years old right now. I'm not sure he wouldn't still be playing if he hadn't had the concussion problems. Because I don't know if you've seen those pictures of him on a surfboard. He looks like a god.
Oh, yeah.
He's jacked. You know, like, yeah, I mean, he is jacked, and he's in great shape, and there's no reason to believe he wouldn't have become, you know, continued to do that as a player. I could have seen Paul Kariya, I think, being a guy that, you know, would have put up really good offensive totals for a long time, and then, you know, in the last 3 or 4 years of his career, would have just been a shutdown guy. Like, would have been, would
like
have
Patrick become
Steve, Steve Yzerman or something, you know? Like, and just would have been like a Selke trophy guy for those years and that kind of thing. So, you know, I mean, but in terms of numbers, I got to go with Eric.
Interesting. Cool. Looking at the standings right now, the Chicago Blackhawks, they're hanging in there, kind of. But if you remove Corey Crawford from the equation, things are starting to look a little bit grim there. And I'm starting to wonder, is it, you know, every empire has to end. And we've said it before, it happened to L.A. Although, of course, L.A. is looking good again. That's another story. But do you think it's finally...
Justin Brown, who knew?
Yeah, who knew? Is it finally happening with the Hawks? Is this finally the end of the run? And that's there's nothing wrong with that. Like, every great team eventually has its demise. And we know that there's major problems with defensive depth. They're giving up a lot of goals. And I can't imagine how many more goals they'd be giving up if it weren't for Corey Crawford.
They give up a ton of shots.
Yeah, a ton of shots. A
ton of shots, bad power play.
Bad, really bad, a lot of things. So what do you guys think? Is it a slump, and are we going to just be kicking ourselves? Kind of like, you know, because to me, they're sort of the New England Patriots of this generation. They always find a way. Every time you write them off, then you kick yourself for doing it. Do you think in a few months we'll be saying, oh, okay,
I don't know, I was kicking myself last year for picking them to go far in the playoffs, which they didn't, and they haven't the last 2 years. You know, I mean, if this had been a team that had played in the conference final last year and lost in game seven of overtime and that, I would say, you know, but this shouldn't be a team that's bagged. I mean, they haven't had they've gone 2 years without long playoff runs. You know, I mean, when I watch them play, it's weird. I just see a team that doesn't, like, that seems tired. Mm. You know, they don't forecheck particularly hard. Like, they don't really cause a lot of havoc on the forecheck, and I think they let teams out of their own end way too easy. And I think with that defense, it really puts a lot of pressure on that defense. And I think that's why you're seeing a lot of what you're seeing. And like, they don't forecheck a lot. Their back check isn't great. You know, I mean, they got a 34-year-old defenseman in Duncan Keith, who's playing 25 minutes a game still. You know, yesterday they scratched Ryan Hartman and they went with seven defensemen, and they still gave up a seventh spot in that game against New Jersey.
Not a good sign. Yeah.
You know, to me, I just don't get it. Like, Alex DeBrincat and Ryan Hartman, like Ryan Hartman was scratched yesterday, and DeBrincat's playing on the fourth line. Like, Patrick Sharp's getting more ice time than those guys. Like, if this is indeed, you know, this we're signaling kind of the beginning of the end for some of these guys, then, I mean, logic would dictate, I think, that you start moving some of these younger guys into top six roles and not playing them on the fourth line, you know? So I don't know. I'm hesitant to say for a team like the Chicago Blackhawks that it's over because they're the Chicago Blackhawks, but they look like a team that's just going to hang around and maybe get in the playoffs, maybe not. And, you know, maybe they can put together something in the playoffs, but boy, they sure don't look like... Let's put it this way. They don't, like, do they scare anybody anymore?
I don't think they do, especially when you've been swept. When you take a team, you get swept in the first round, and then you lose, like, a third of your roster. The team that got swept lost Chalmerson.
But I don't think teams before the game are sitting there shitting their pants because they're playing the Chicago Blackhawks tonight.
Right.
You know? I mean, Patrick Kane's got 17 points. He's not even a point-per-game player. They don't have a guy in the top 30 scorers in the NHL.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think this iteration of the Blackhawks might be done, but I'm not writing off the entire Taves Kane era just yet. I think what is a best-case scenario for Chicago is that in, say, 3 years, young defensemen like Henry Jokiharju and Ian Mitchell, who they just drafted in 2017, those are the kids that come up. They're the great puck movers, and they help sort of replenish the stocks because we know the defense corps is aging and it's unbalanced. But, I mean, Taves and Kane, I think they're going to be very good players for a long time. I don't think the Hawks are going to be scary again for a couple of years, but they'll still have the pieces where maybe they can put something together. Maybe they won't be in the cap hell that they are in right now, but it's probably going to be messy for a bit. And, I mean, messy's not necessarily bad.
It's messy. That blue line is a messy backyard. Boy, that's messy. They got too many guys. They're sitting out guys. They're playing 7D a game, and they still can't play. But I am happy to know that the Chicago Blackhawks will return on the strength of the shoulders of Yoki Hoki Hoki or Yoki Hari Karku or what's the guy's name again?
Yoki Hari.
I was just hoping, I wanted Ryan to say, I was smiling at him, I wanted to say the words Chad Chris. As we call him in the office, Chad Chris. And I'll explain the story briefly. When he was drafted, at the podium, whoever said his name, we were at the draft, and whoever said his name said it like this, Chad Chris. And we have no idea why, so every time we talk about this defense prospect of the Hawks, Chad Chris, in the office, we have to say his name like that.
Who was it that said that?
I don't know.
It's definitely from the files of Cool Story Bro, but I don't know. Every time his name comes up, we have to say it in the office, so you guys can start your own Chad Chris meme as well, or Chad Chris. moving on. Vadim Shipachev, or Shipachev, I don't know what his name is anymore. I guess we don't need to know anymore because he's not that relevant in North America anymore. He was looking back on his ordeal. He's gone back to the KHL, to his original team, and he said something like, any Russian player should think it over 10 times before making the trek over here to North America. Do you guys think, is there something there, and was he truly mishandled by the Golden Knights? And I mean, you have George McPhee, this sort of what seemed like revisionist history, him saying, oh, he was our worst player, pretty much. So do you side with Shipachev on that, or do you think he's sort of being a bit of a baby? Is there sour grapes going on here?
Is he being a bit of a baby? Well, to that I would probably say, wah!
If you think that was bad to listen to, you should have seen Ken's face. Wow.
Yes, I think he's being a baby. Yes, he didn't even give it a chance. I mean, how many of us have come to a place where we work and you get all these promises that things are going to be a certain way and you go, hey, wait a second. I didn't sign up for this.
It sounds like every work ever.
Wait a second. You didn't tell me I was going to have to do this. And at the first sign of adversity, this guy bails. I mean, all they wanted him to do was go down to Chicago and play and dominate the way Alex Tuch did and the way
Shea Theodore
did, and that he was going to get his chance. And you know what? I mean, if this guy's thinking right, he's going, hey, wait a minute. I go down to Chicago. I'm still making $4 million a year, $4.5 million. I think it's $5 million this year. And guess what? No escrow. No escrow. I make even more money in the American League than I do in the NHL.
And
this
you
is
get
awesome.
To see Chicago.
Yeah, and I get to win play in Chicago, and it's a crappy league, and I'll dominate. Like, what's wrong with that? No, I think that, you know what? I'm tired of hearing, well, he was promised this, that, and the other thing when he signed, and they didn't come through on it, and therefore they mishandled him. Okay, like, really? Really? Like, hockey players, you know, I mean...
Imagine that in the NFL.
VC was promised stuff. Everybody gets promised this stuff. If you can't play or if you can't prove that you can be a contributor on that team, then you're not going to play no matter what you were promised. And to me, I mean, you look at the Vegas Golden Knights. I mean, they are an expansion team, and they are building an unbelievable identity. They put Jason Garrison on waivers, you know? I mean, so what does it tell Eric Halla and all those other guys, David Perron and all those other guys who are busting their butts and playing hard for this team? Yeah, you know, this guy really can't cut it, but he's going to be our number one center because we signed him in the offseason and we're paying him a lot of money. Mm-hmm. That creates a bad culture right from the word go. And this is supposed to be a clean slate. This team is supposed to be a clean slate. No bad contracts, no this, no that. And then you're going to come in and you're going to create a culture by doing something like that.
And a multi-year deal. It's not like he's an expiring contract.
He's a crybaby.
For me, I mean, as soon as this signing happened, I was reticent because he's 30 years old, like never played in North America.
League,
And you think, like, you think you're going to have an impact on the NHL? Like, what kind of, like, who has that track record recently?
Yeah.
I mean, I've talked to scouts and GMs about this. You have to come over to North America by a certain age or it's just not going to work because you get habits. Playing on the bigger ice surface, it is a different game. Scoring chances don't come from everywhere in Europe. It's a lot more, like, strategic, and you know it's a lot more boring if you ever watch games over there. Like Shipachev, for me, like he was never going to be an NHLer because he's going to come over here and he's going to realize that it's a totally different game. He's not in his peak years. I mean, they alluded to fitness, and I don't know if he was out of shape or not, but he probably just couldn't keep up with the North American game because it's completely different. And if you looked at his track record internationally or even at the World Cup of Hockey, he was a non-factor. if he's playing against North Americans, he's a non-factor. And I know he's had great points internationally otherwise, but it's a different game. And, I mean, I kind of understand why they did it in the first place. It's like, let's get some guys here. Let's get somebody who's coveted by other teams. And let's start building something that's kind of exciting. But then they did the expansion draft. They got a great mix. Obviously, yeah, they had success right off the bat. And it's like, if you can't keep up, we don't have a place for you. And, obviously no other NHL team thought he was worth picking up via trade or anything else. Hey, so what does that tell you?
Yeah. And I think it's all exacerbated by the fact that everything they've done has defied logic so far. Like, nobody ever thought they were going to be this good this quickly and that they were going to get off to the start they did.
Yeah.
And so now it becomes like, holy crap, like, if we play, like, just over 500 the rest of the year, we can make the playoffs.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? And to me, you got a team that's trying to establish itself in a market, and you got the Oakland Raiders coming there in 2 years. I mean, you know, okay, you could bottom out and get the high picks and all that other stuff and be lousy for a couple of years, or you can establish yourself as a legitimate team that has legitimate possibilities, and you've got such a head start in those 2 years for when the Oakland Raiders come, because they're good, and they're going to be good, and they're probably going to be a good team as soon as they get there.
Yeah, and it's kind of ironic that the team with a bunch of guys thrown together who had never played together before, or very few of whom had played together before, that team has good chemistry.
Yeah.
They're working really well together, and it seems like a good, tight room already. So maybe Shapachev would have disrupted that. And I agree with what you said about the speed, Ryan. And it makes me think of any interviews we've done over the years with players who have come over from Europe, from Swedish League or Finnish League, and they start in the AHL, and we always say, what's the hardest part about the transition? They always say, the speed, the decision-making. So maybe it was
the decision-making big time because of the size of the ice.
Less puck time.
The size of the ice,
and it's different for Artemi Panarin, was young enough when he came over, and even, it's very different for a guy like Alexander Radulov, who played in the NHL, played major junior.
Yeah, he knew what he was getting into when he came back.
Exactly, exactly.
I mean, there's a reason Nigel Dawes is leading the KHL in goal scoring.
That's right.
It's a different metric there.
Yeah.
That's right, exactly. Gary Bettman was in the news today speaking about the Olympics, not just the Pyeongchang, but Beijing, and I think it was pretty disconcerting what he said here. The quote was, Thomas Bach said, if you don't go to Korea, you can't come to Beijing. Well, okay, thank you. The second is, if the Winter Olympics comes back to North America, I'm not saying we'd go, but it's a different equation. To me, I don't know. Maybe I'm a bit emotional when it comes to the Olympics, because I'm, like the players, I'm upset that it's not happening, but I find that an upsetting response from Bettman, and I think it's a bit embarrassing. When you just completed a trip to Sweden, you're trying to grow the game internationally, you're going to China, and then you're talking tough about going to Beijing. It's such a mixed message. It bothers me. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Well, I think this is all just a bunch of bluster. Mm-hmm. I really do. I think the NHL, I think the NHL will be in Beijing. I don't think there's any question about it. I think they'll somehow work out all their differences in time to be in Beijing. But I don't get it. I don't get any of this. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, so we're not going to go over to Korea because the games won't be in prime time in North America. Okay. All right. Great. Did it ever occur to you that maybe they'll be in prime time in a place where, like, more than a billion people might be watching it?
Yeah.
Did you ever think that?
Just a thought.
Whatever. Yeah. No, this whole... I'm like you, Matt. I think this is a travesty. This is an absolute travesty. I know you hate the Olympics, Ryan, so you're probably happier than a pig in doo-doo, but
I hate the International Olympic Committee.
Okay.
Yeah, so, I mean, Gary Bettman's a lawyer. He's doing his lawyering right here. I'm fine with that. Like, I see what he's doing, and it's... Yeah, I'd like NHLers to be at the Olympics, but I don't... Like, I understand why the NHL stood up to the IOC and was trying to get a better deal, and yeah, it'd be a lot better with NHL players in it, but I've said it in the past, like, if you can stay away from the IOC, like, do it. Mm-hmm. You know, like, if you're friends with them, you might as well be friends with FIFA. You know, maybe Seth Blatter will end up playing for Team Korea at the Olympics, who knows. I just, you know, it's sort of like, if it's not going to happen, then cool, let's just forget about it. And, I mean, you know, there's even reports the other week that maybe Russia's not going to send their guys because of the doping stuff. I'm sure the IOC will figure out some way to make it go away, because that's what they're good at, is ignoring stuff. But, yeah, I just kind of wash my hands. I think it'll be kind of fun to see what happens. But if you look at what happened at the Karjala Cup and the Deutschland Cup with the Canadians and the Americans that were over there.
They sucked!
Yeah, it didn't go very well. Yeah. And so I'm not really sure what we can really expect from this tournament. And I don't know, I'm just going to watch NHL hockey. Yeah. And
I'm not. I'm going to watch. I am gonna boycott the NHL during the Olympics.
Uh-huh.
I'm boycotting the NHL.
What's Jason Arbas going to say about that?
I don't know. I actually haven't run that by him yet. I actually haven't completely thought this out, but I haven't run it by him yet. But that was my thought. I wasn't going to blog about NHL hockey. Mm. I wasn't going to watch any NHL hockey. I wasn't going to follow it. I wasn't going to do anything. I was just going to do all grassroots stuff as my form of boycott.
That's
against
cool.
the NHL.
Yeah,
but you know, like, again, yeah, I don't know what the boss will think.
Maybe
of that,
he's listening. Hey,
so
Jason.
We'll have to run that by him first.
Plus, as soon as there's like a breaking trade, Ken's gonna text us all at 11 and be like, we gotta write about this right now.
He's not gonna text.
No,
he calls.
Like, you guys have to write about
it. He doesn't text, he calls. I don't know. I'm a little concerned because even if, you know, the NHL is less worried about TV when it comes to China, some of the problems are still going to exist in 4 years. I mean, when it comes to paying insurance, or owners are still going to be upset about not getting revenue, they're going to be worried about their players getting hurt. Those issues aren't going to go away magically. They go with every set of Olympic Games. So I was the one who was really optimistic that they were going to go to Pyeongchang. So now I'm kind of jaded, and I'm worried that it's not going to work for Beijing either, but I hope I'm wrong. I really do.
The only thing I would say to that is that there are heavy hitters in China that are really getting into hockey, and I'm not sure how these sort of financial things work. Again, it's the IOC, so anything goes. But if they wanted to get money, I feel it would probably be easier to get money to the NHL players
for
insurance.
But the money ultimately wasn't an issue because the IIHF had basically said that they had come up with a way to pay for it. So in the end, it wasn't the money. In the end, it was just the NHL just... I don't think they ever had a huge appetite to go. Mm. They were looking for a lot of excuses not to go because every time it was like, okay, well... You know, we have to pay our own way. Well, okay, maybe we'll pay your way. Well, okay, then still, though, we got to shut down our season, you know? And then and there always seemed to be an excuse. And I think they were dead set against going in the first place.
And what I'm worried about, and I've been saying this for a couple years now, is that I think it's the opposite of a goodwill gesture when it comes to labor negotiations. I think the players are almost universally upset about not going, and a lot of them are just... showing it on Twitter, everywhere.
Yeah.
Even the guys that weren't going to go, they're upset they're going to miss their midseason
vacation
to heal their injuries.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think the players are going to remember this when it comes to making concessions during the next CBA negotiations. Mm-hmm. They're going to say, F you. You know, we really wanted these Olympics. You guys wouldn't make it work for us. So maybe when it comes to another contentious point...
To another international strategy, then yeah.
Yeah, maybe they're going to be sticks in the mud too and get revenge. I don't know. To me, it's something I worry about. We're going to finish it off with some reader questions. A few different ones about the Ducks. We're going to try to amalgamate them into one. Basically, multiple readers are asking, should they be making a trade? And some names were thrown out: forwards, Galchenyuk, Evander Kane, James Van Riemsdyk. I'll answer this one first because I was writing about this recently. And here's the thing, okay? So the Ducks are not in a playoff spot right now. They have devastating injuries. Mm-hmm. Ryan Kessler, Ryan Getzlaf, Cam Fowler, John Gibson dealing with concussion. So that, to me, takes them out of the running for an Evander Kane or a James Van Riemsdyk because those guys are rentals. They're pending unrestricted free agents. And the Ducks right now, I don't think they're in a position to make a rental because they might not make the playoffs. Mm. You can go online and find it. I wrote about it last week. I think they might be better off missing the playoffs for 1 year and getting a high draft pick and then reloading. But to me, a name like Galchenyuk is much more interesting. He has 2 more years left on his deal. He's fallen in favor in Montreal. He's only 23 years old. He's scored 30 goals before. You might be able to get him for cheaper now than ever, because the Habs love trashing their young star every chance they get. And the Ducks do have that surplus of defensemen. So the example I threw out online last week was Sammy Vatanen, because the Ducks sort of have a younger, maybe better Vatanen, Brandon Montour. Vatanen's contract is identical to Galchenyuk's in cap at minus, I think, $25,000. So it's very negligible. Habs could use some mobility on the back end. So that's just an example I was throwing out there. If you're Bob Murray, I think if you do make a trade,
yeah,
it's got to be...
If you're trading with Montreal, they could probably get him for Steve Wagner.
That's right. Yeah, so I think... I think you want you don't want an expiring asset if you're Bob Murray, because the Ducks, they're not in a position of power right now. Maybe they climb back into it, but I'm skeptical because they got a lot of good players who just are not physically playing hockey for them right now.
Yeah, I mean, I would tend to agree with you, Matt. You put it pretty succinctly, so I'm not going to add too much to it. But yeah, I mean, the Ducks, how do you know how good they are, right? Mm. I mean, I would be concerned about, you know, things like Corey Perry's production, that kind of stuff. And, you know, the fact that you just don't know what you have because your best players are on the shelf, right? And, you know, so you do make a trade. And like you say, we don't know what this team is going to look like a couple of months from now. And you make a trade for one of these pending UFAs. And next thing you don't make the playoffs the way it happened with Florida and Jágr the first year. He came there and Vanek. And, you know, then you end up just making a trade for nothing. And, you know, this just might be one of those years for the Ducks where it's just not going to happen for them, and they have to kind of just take their lumps and move on.
Yeah, I think you just wait, and, you know, as soon as next year, maybe Sam Steele is in your forward core. Max Jones might be not a replacement for Corey Perry specifically, but, I mean, if Perry's not scoring, then you might as well give Jones a crack. And maybe even Josh Mahura makes a run at the defense core, depending on how many guys you have and who's healthy. But I think you wait and see what you have next year, and you reassess based on how Getzlaff and Kessler are playing next year.
That's right. And I think the Ducks, I really think they could benefit by, if they get a bit lucky and sort of pull out what Dallas or Philly did last year, if they do miss the playoffs, and they win the lottery or win a top three pick, they get a player good enough to go right into the lineup. So they get an Andrei Svechnikov or maybe a Zadina, someone like that. A forward is what they really need. Because we know their defense core is set for years. Their goaltending is set for years. Yeah. Their forward core is aging. So it would be very interesting if they got an 18-year-old who was NHL good on top of a Sam Steele coming into the lineup. And suddenly you got the team reloading, and then Kessler, Getzlaff are still young enough just barely to make an impact and mentor the young guys. Suddenly the Ducks look dangerous going forward next year. So I don't know. You can't plan on that happening, but no. I'm just saying it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world if it were to happen. Last question of the podcast is from Zach Allers. He says, what's going on in Arizona, and is it too early to say the coach, Rick Tocchet, is on the hot seat?
Yeah, I think it is too early. Mm-hmm. I mean, he hasn't really had an opportunity. And I mean, it's the same old thing. I mean, they've got good young players. Some of them are playing up to their capabilities, and others have taken a bit of a step back. But I don't think any of this is coaching. I don't, like, when I see them play, I don't see a team that's getting out coached or a team that's, you know, I just see a team that's just not, they're just not good enough.
Yeah. And I think too, with Antti Raanta, you know, starting off early the season getting hurt, that just killed them because they didn't have goaltending depth.
They had zero, and their goaltending was atrocious.
So, you know, a lot of those losses could be chalked up just to Raanta not being around. And then things snowball, your confidence takes a hit as a team, and that's where they're at right now. And, I mean, it's probably a lost season already. But maybe from here on out, Tocchet can lay the foundation for next year and figure out who he likes, who needs to improve, maybe who gets jettisoned in the off season. And, I mean, silver lining, I mean, Clayton Keller is playing amazing, so at least the fans have that to watch.
Yeah, it's amazing. Eh? Like, he's going to be the rookie of the year on the worst team. I mean, I don't know.
And just tearing it up.
It'd be interesting to find out if that's happened before.
I mean, Tyler Myers won it on a pretty bad Buffalo team, if I'm not mistaken. But
I thought it was the year before they got bad. I thought
maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I think they got bad after he
had that. Because I think
maybe he was made,
that was Ryan Miller's Vezina year. Was the same year that Myers won, if I'm not mistaken.
Nathan MacKinnon. Oh, no, Colorado even made the playoffs.
Oh, yeah, they did.
But Landeskog.
Maybe they're bad that year. Yeah, that sounds about right.
Somebody did it.
It's interesting too, like last year, so I was very defensive of Gerard Gallant last year because I said, how can you evaluate the job he's done with the Panthers when the Panthers changed their team so much in the offseason before the year where they bombed out? And with Rick Tocchet, it's the same thing. You can't really evaluate a coach when your roster changed so much. They brought in, you know, Hjalmarsson and Raanta, Derek Stepan, so many moves. The team is so different, and also Jason Demers, right? So you can't really know what Rick Tocchet's impact is until you see a larger sample size. So I do think he's going to have some rope. And I don't think there's been no reports of, you know, dissent in the dressing room, anything like that coming out of there,
as far as I know. I think actually it's the opposite.
Yeah. So I think, to me, he's going to get some leftover leash. I think the person who should be more worried is John Chayka because he made a lot of moves. He had, I think, Arizona next to maybe Dallas had the loudest offseason, and the results somehow they didn't just not get better; they got worse. And historic, like they're battling, they're gunning against the 74-75 Washington Capitals.
They are,
right now.
They are actually.
Right in
they
the
are.
Mix.
I figured it out. They were on pace for like the worst 82 game. Or one of the worst. I mean, Ottawa and Tampa. Ottawa and somebody
Sharks
else had 84 games.
In 92, yeah, 93.
Yeah, and they were terrible. Like, they're even...
But Arizona's
they won't
below.
Be that bad. But they would be just above those teams in terms of an 82-game game season.
I was looking at the standings yesterday, and I saw they had two wins, and I was like, when did they get a second win? who lost to Arizona?
I can't remember. It's true. All right, well, thanks for listening, everybody, and enjoy the Hall of Fame induction ceremonies if you're watching them, and we'll be back next week to talk some more hockey.